whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour number 5 of the G-Back Nation on 105.3. The Fan. Mavs game now coming up at 6:30 as they take on the Trailblazers with the ice and snow in town, causing some travel snags and concerns. So they move that up. It's a triple game night here in North Texas. You have, of course, at the Orange Bowl, Notre Dame and Penn State playing on TV. You have the Stars in action and the Mavs in action as well. So thanks for making us part of your day. Hope you're staying safe and warm out there. Time now for Zach Wolchuk's Chuck Wagon. Here's Zachary.
Thank you very much. As we get you set for Penn State and Notre Dame, we did get news, according to Pete Thamel of ESPN, Penn State star edge Abdul Carter has his injured left shoulder heavily wrapped. Expect him to play tonight, but he may be used more situationally. Averages usually 46 snaps a game, so we'll see if he's healthy enough to get anywhere near that tonight.
I'm looking at him right now, Wolchuk, in warm-up. He's got a shoulder harness on his left arm, so you can see the white band. He's got his navy blue sleeve, but he's got a shoulder harness on that left shoulder. So probably the range of motion on that, not very good. They're probably worried about that thing getting raised on him with a tackle or something like that.
Well, I mean, he's a guy, certainly looks like he could be a top five pick coming up at the end of April. Would not be upset at all if he slid. That would actually be a dream scenario. Can you slide him and get him to 12 overall? We would be doing an absolute party. That'd be like getting CeeDee Lamb at 17 a few years back. But he's a guy that you're in the playoffs. You're going to play, and you're going to fight through. You're going to do it for your team. But he also, big picture, doesn't want to hurt that any worse. So then all of a sudden, his future in the NFL could be harmed at all by that. I did see some stuff like with Drew Aller. So we've heard rumors Drew Aller could maybe decide to enter the draft if he ends up playing well tonight. Maybe they win, they go to a national championship. And Albert Breer reported the Giants have actually done a lot of work on Drew Aller. So I wonder if he's a guy, a good performance, he ends up saying, you know what, I'm not staying. I am going to go out. It's a weak quarterback class. Maybe I can go at the top of the first round since I've kind of changed the perception of me. And the Giants, that feels very Daniel Jones-esque. If the Giants were to go and draft Drew Aller, I'd kind of be here for it. I mean, he's got all the skills. He's big, he's mobile, he's got a good arm. But I don't know. He certainly has left something to be desired so far at the college level. I think they've won because of their defense more so than anything in the playoff. But maybe he goes out there and lights up Notre Dame's defense tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy who can really change the course of his next year and his entire career here because, as you mentioned, I think there are some people in NFL circles that feel like, man, if he declared for the draft in what is kind of a down quarterback class, he could easily be the first quarterback off the board for all the reasons you mentioned. Like, he meets all the qualifications when it just comes to the arm and the size and all that kind of stuff. So if you go out there and ball, you win the national championship, or you just go out there and you're clearly not the reason why your team is losing, that can send a dude, that can catapult him into a huge opportunity. So, yeah, that's a guy that I'm excited to watch here because I keep seeing after the Boise State game, it was like, dude, this is a guy that everybody's talking about. Like, yeah, people, like, scouts love this guy.
They do. And he's got a lot of talent. There's no question. And then tomorrow night, of course, we got Quinn Ewers. And what's going on with Quinn? Does he end up deciding to come out? Does he end up going back? Well, I'll tell you, he doesn't seem like a guy that's really in need of the financial side of it by just going to the NFL.
Not at all.
He signed a deal worth $1.4 million just a few weeks before his 18th birthday. That's part of the reason he didn't play his last year at Southlake. Went and enrolled at Ohio State early. We know he's been one of the highest earning NIL players over the last couple of years. And here was actually Quinn Ewers talking about giving a salary to his own mother.
I get to pay my mom a salary, which is nice, just because, you know, all the effort and work they put into me growing up. I mean, they both, when we were living in South Texas, they both quit their jobs and moved up to Southlake. We really lived in the Grapevine area first, and then just for them and all the work that they put in for me and my two sisters is, I mean, even what I give back can't describe how thankful I am for everything that they do for me.
It's pretty badass.
Wait a minute.
I think we'd all like to be able to give our own mother a salary, but
he was in Grapevine? You think Southlake was moving things around there for him?
Oh, Brian, that's been alleged for...
Oh, is that really... am I late to the party on this one?
Oh, it's not just a Quinn thing. There's been people from other schools that have...
Grapevine's
alleged.
A nice area, though, but it's across the... It's across the way from Southlake.
Well, Kyler Murray technically started at Louisville and then found his way to Allen. So we've seen some foolery going on. These kids don't necessarily
end up
going where they should have been going.
But. Good for mom getting a salary.
But that's a little vague, though. Like, mom gets a salary.
Is what's the salary?
Is that a 40K? Is that a 50K? Are we hitting six figures on this thing? What is the actual number on this?
Mom probably gets $100,000 for being mom.
$100K for being mom?
Yeah, being mom.
Yeah, what's a fair minimum salary for your own mother?
What? How much you making?
You're making 1.5.
Oh, if you're making 1.5, I think you give mom at least 40-50 grand.
That seems a little light.
Well, I know, but 1.5 isn't going to last forever. I mean, after taxes,
well, it's every year we get 1.5, right?
Yeah, and you want to give her some every year. You know,
I think that's what I think that's what we're doing, right?
I think that's what he's doing too. Yeah. But I do wonder how much it is. I mean, maybe Gavin's right. Maybe this is like mom. I mean, I'll give you 40 to 50.
Okay,
but...
Jerry Jones, guys, what are we doing over here?
Yes, you called out Jerry. Let's go,
Dawson. Dawson, well, Jerry Jones. What do you got going over there, buddy?
Well, at $1.5 million, I'm trying to build my own generational wealth. Yeah. You know,
It's
not going to add up very quickly if I got a massive leak in the boat with,
yeah,
with
but,
mom.
Yeah, but I mean, you know? You can't put a price tag on those sugar cream pies, Dawson. You know that better than anybody.
No, you can't. And you know, I put it at about what is that $3,500 a month? You know, we're taking care of a lot of stuff there. And you know, once I get to 20, 30, 40 million, if I you know, get that sort of upward mobility going on in my career, then
I'll give her 100,000. Yeah.
Because if you give her too much, don't you have to pay taxes on that?
I think that's what he might be doing. Yeah. Do you think he's kind of working around that?
Because there's a thing like if you pay your kids a certain amount, you know, it kind of helps your taxes, right? If you own a small business or whatnot.
Maybe if they have the same last name, they can get around this. I don't know. That's a great point, Lucius.
Is it considered a
gift?
I'm
just thinking like the Joneses. You know, every dollar spent is one less dollar of capital you have to invest in, you know, oil mining operations, all kind of stuff. And at $1.5 million, if you're frivolous, like if mom's getting $100,000 out of your $700 after taxes, what's dad getting? What are cousins getting?
Dad's getting a big bag of nothing.
We can find ourselves living check to check real quick.
Mom's the one that's kind of got you through the bad times. Dad was the one that was kind of on your ass all the time, right? Mom had your back. Dad was always kind of making you mow the yard when you were hungover and stuff like that.
Get your ass up, son.
Yeah. Let's what go. Are you doing? Well, you're not going to lay around all day.
Dad was getting unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on your high school team, bitching at the refs.
Mom's making everybody Friday night dinner.
Yeah, let me just tell you, yeah, exactly.
Honey, don't you worry. Yeah. I got all the apple slices, orange slices for
you. Dad's got 7 jobs so you can go to the playoff game. Come on, man. What are you doing over there?
That's a good call. No, I think that's it's actually a notch on your belt. I'm busting your chops. But
I don't know many dads
that are getting unsportsmanlike penalties from the bleachers, man. That's one of the coolest things you've ever done.
I just got tired of seeing – for 4 years, I watched my son win one game. I mean, that was hard. That was hard.
You're underselling how emotional some of the moms get out there, though. I mean, I've heard some vulgar things being a former timekeeper at PSA, and the moms sometimes were the worst offenders.
It's the Yeti Cup moms.
Yeah, are parents not getting kicked out of football games? Because I know basketball, baseball, soccer, it's a regular occasion.
Yeah, Val got escorted. I had to escort out of there when he's sitting in the parking lot. Duke said, hey, man, don't bring her back, bro.
Well, Quinn Ewers also was at the Cotton Bowl Media Day yesterday. He was asked about the 2021 Ohio State recruiting class going winless against Michigan. Now, he was part of that 2021 Ohio State recruiting class. He said, guys, the class wasn't winless. I beat Michigan earlier this season.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
If Coach Day made a different choice at quarterback, maybe they could have won 4 straight. A little tongue-in-cheek there, but that's pretty great from Quinn. He did indeed beat Michigan. We'll see what
Burrow at that place, too. By the way,
and CJ Stroud. Gosh, they were loaded. Mm. They were absolutely loaded at wide receiver at quarterback. I mean, they had Justin Fields there, and those dudes were playing behind him. It was a plethora of really really good college quarterbacks, and most of them have turned out to be pretty damn good in the pros.
I'm surprised everybody's so confident in Ohio State now. I mean, this dude's got a track record of fumbling it.
Oh, he might mess it up tomorrow. There's no question.
Yeah, he does. He could. He very, very well could. Okay, let's get back to Deion Sanders, shall we? So Prime was asked again, and this was on Good Morning America, about the possibility of moving to the pros. All right, are you going to ditch Colorado? Would you possibly go coach in the NFL? The Raiders are an opening. We've heard about that flirtation. Here's Prime engaged in that.
But is there a chance that you could head to the NFL?
I know where you're going. You try to go viral, right? Yeah. If I respond, you know we're going viral, right?
I know, right?
You know what? The only way I would consider is to coach my son. Sons. Okay.
I think we're going to go viral with that.
Yeah.
So that's not a no.
Well, I love Colorado. Now, I love my Buffaloes. I love everything that we're building. I love everything that we're doing. And I love Boulder, Colorado. I do.
I love everything about Colorado. I love everything we're doing here. But if I could coach my sons, plural, I'd go. You think any of these teams, and I think it would be the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders make too much sense to me. Maybe Brady would put the kibosh on this. I don't know. But the report is Brady does love Shador. And you don't think Mark Davis would overdraft Shiloh just to appease Prime and get him to come coach the Raiders if they don't get the guy they want?
I mean, I don't think he's draftable. We'll see after the combine and everything, but I think he's going to run like a 4.8 or something like that. So just put him on the practice squad, though. You can coach him there, too. You know, coach him up.
You could. You could put him
on there.
He's
got some brawny vibes to it.
Yeah, I think Prime would want him to be drafted. I think that would be a big thing for him. He'd want both his kids drafted.
Hey, Lakers right. Got their money back from Bronny.
Yep.
They got their money back.
No, they sure did. They sure did.
They did. We actually yesterday celebrated the anniversary of the Music City Miracle. The reverse pass, Frank Wycheck going over to Kevin Dyson, and the Titans were able to come back and beat the Buffalo Bills, which was, I think, Wade Phillips actually is the head coach of that Buffalo Bills team that day. Well, unfortunately, Frank Wycheck has since passed away, and they did find out that it was due to CTE, the degenerative brain disease linked to repeated blows to the head. So he did have CTE that was diagnosed after he was passed, and they went ahead and did their research. So he passed away a year ago, but now Tennessee also is going to be losing their play-by-play guy, one of the best, Mike Heath. Mike Heath is a big fan. We love him on TD Tuesday. Oh. He jumped on the pregame show last year when the Cowboys played in Tennessee for the Prime Video game. So Mike Heath is leaving. He's going to Tennessee Vols basketball commentating. He couldn't turn down the Volunteers gig. He's been a fan of them since he was a little kid. He went to games as a kid. So he is leaving the Titans booth to go to Rocky Top and be the voice of the Vols. But here he is describing his iconic call of the Music City Miracle.
Do the Titans have a miracle left in them in what has been a magical season to this point? If they do, they need it now.
What stood out to me, they had never practiced home run throwback with anything other than a squib kick. So on their end, it was a huge surprise that Christie kicked it up in the air. Massive shock.
Christie kicks it high and short.
I'm just trying to call what I see and keep it as simple as possible.
Going to be fielded by Lorenzo Neal at the 25. Yeah, pitches it back to Wycheck.
The greatest thing, in my opinion, about the call is the color commentator, Pat Ryan. He saw immediately that there was no one up the sideline.
He throws it across the field to Dyson.
He's got something.
30. I'm like, 30, look. 40, look. 50, look. And then I'm pretty convinced there's not a flag down, and so then I go absolutely nuts.
10,
he's got
five,
it!
End zone! Touchdown, Titans! There are no flags on the field! It's a miracle! Tennessee has pulled a miracle! A miracle for the Titans!
I look
amazing. It was a beautiful call.
Yeah.
And the touchdown, Titans. I guess they're going to have to find somebody else. I mean, it's. I'm sure Titan fans are upset about it.
Is he going to do ball football too, or just basketball?
He's just going completely Volunteers. Yeah, I think he might be doing football as well.
Cool.
But I know the basketball gig was one that he was very desiring of. He was
him.
A big basketball fan as a kid. So
that's one that I feel like you're going to remember where you were when you saw that.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if you guys are old enough, but Brian, do you remember where you were when that play happened?
Yeah, it was. We're getting for it was 1999, right?
Yep. Was the year the Titans won or went to the Super Bowl, lost to the Rams.
I was working for the Cowboys. This is my first year, and we were in the playoffs against the Vikings that day. I think it was a Saturday. The game was on a Saturday, and we were playing Sunday. So yeah, I was on my way to to Minneapolis.
It was an incredible
game. I had just done the second sports radio show of my life. With my buddy Chad on a Saturday on KVAN 1550 in Vancouver. And we went over to the gym that he worked at after that. And I was on a treadmill, like watching towards the end of that game. And it was just unbelievable. The place went nuts.
Chad and Gav, man. Chad and Gav with Sports Chad and Gav here, man.
Chad, you know what's funny about Chad? Chad was, or probably still is, like a professional bodybuilder, but he couldn't put on any muscle. So he was, and he wouldn't do steroids. I was like, bro, you got to do steroids. And I called him the body, just kind of like trolling him.
You called him the body?
Yeah, dude. The guy worked out like 12 hours a week constantly, all the protein, and he couldn't get any stronger than I am right now.
That is awesome. And you're just calling, hey, what's up, bod? That's incredible. The four dudes.
Chad the body doing.
Shut up, Gav.
Great broadcaster.
Gosh. Last thing here in the Chuck Wagon, Daniel Gafford is available for tonight's game against the Blazers with that ankle sprain. So, hey, that's back-to-back good news injuries right there. We thought PJ, we thought Gaff, both those could have been long-term. They're back the next game after getting hurt. So let's go Mavs as they're about to tip off against the Blazers.
Right on, man. What do we expect tomorrow night with Texas and Ohio State? I have questions for the semifinal. We have the Fan After Dark Crosstalk coming up after that, and we're back right here. It's the GBAC Nation, the Fan. All right, welcome back. It is the GBAC Nation here on 105.3. The Fan. Mavs are going to get underway here with the Trailblazers in under 10 minutes. I have a little Mavs topic for you. Then I want to talk about the college football semifinal tomorrow night in Arlington. Segment of the Nation brought to you by the Frankels. Life is unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankelfirm.com. Okay, well, Chuck, I think you have been the most bullish guy on Quentin Grimes, and he was huge the other night, had six threes. What if I told you right now I think they should actually be looking at trading him, or I want to know what they could get for him?
You know what? I wouldn't be opposed to that. I do think that this is a sell-high opportunity for Quentin Grimes, and he is a role player. Like, I love him on this team and the depth that he's able to give, but if they're able to upgrade and add another wing or even add a better, you know, more consistent ball-handling guard, I wouldn't be against it. But I just loved his pesky nature defensively, and then he'll get hot from three like you saw the other night. But, yeah, if you end up having to put him in a package with, like, Maxey or something and you can upgrade, I'm totally in.
Right on, because I was on X looking for Mavs stuff. Grant Afseth, friend of the show, great Mavs reporter. He had this stat. I thought it was nearly unbelievable. Quentin Grimes right now is clocking 1.17 points per possession in shots off the dribble. He is fifth in the league. That's superstar territory. His career high up to this point 2 years ago was 0.64.
Damn.
So he's like, he's 90% better in these situations off the dribble than he's ever been. And that was 2 years ago, by the way. So it's not like he's been trending up gradually. He, you know, anyway, I've loved watching him play, but so much of what he's doing right now is knocking down these turnaround shots, these shots off the dribble where he's off balance. And I'm like, holy crap, you know, where has this guy come from? And why was he available for such a reasonable contract? I just think right now he's on an absolute heater to open up this season. And as the trade deadline approaches, that would be one guy that I wouldn't be fighting you too hard if you wanted to move on from.
Man, I'll tell you what, the more I watch him and just all the new additions that Nico has made, it's I mean, they've all hit for the most part. All the new faces that they brought in. And the other thing is, it's just crazy the idea that we get Grimes when we're just salary dumping Tim Hardaway Jr.
Like, right.
What a blessing when you just consider basically the swap of THJ for Quentin Grimes. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah, and I think so much of it is just outperforming what realistic expectations are. You know, I think he should be about a Tim Hardaway Jr. level of frustration, and it's like this is one of the most efficient shooters off the dribble that we've seen. I mean, he's in Kyrie Irving territory here.
It's unreal.
So if somebody wants to bring him in thinking we're going to start him and, you know, give him even more shots, I think that might be a huge opportunity to find something, especially if it's, you know, for that elite wing defender or for a better ball handling guard. Okay, let's talk college football and the semifinal tomorrow night. Of course, it has the state's attention. Do you trust the turnover factor against Ohio State's defense? They seem so opportunistic. I think if it's going to go wrong for the Longhorns tomorrow, it'll probably be a result of a couple of picks, won't it, Brian?
Yeah, I think so. To me, I do worry about I'm going to be interested to see. I think this game very well can hinge on how Texas' offensive line is able not only to protect, but to run the football. I think they're going to have to be able to do that. I think they're going to have to. If this turns into just Quinn Ewers having to throw every single snap, this could be a long, long day for Texas. I feel like they're going to have some balance here, but they're going to have to get some protection. But you're right about the turnovers. If all of a sudden you start putting, you know, Ewers in situations where he has to just continually throw the football, he's been prone to some mistakes. And the one thing that Ohio State has, they might not have elite pass rushers, but, man, they are so physical up front. And they've got guys that are capable of controlling this game up front. And so I think that, to me, it just if somehow Texas can find balance in this game, and it's easy to say, it's a cliche, everybody wants to be able to run the ball. But I think in this case they do. I think they have to find a way not to put Quinn Ewers in harm's way in this football game.
What goes wrong when the Longhorns can't run the ball? It seems so inconsistent. You know, I think to close the season, they ran it well. They ran it well against Clemson. Obviously, yeah. They did not run it well against Georgia. They couldn't sustain it against Arizona State. It's so inconsistent. I feel like it should be better than that.
Well, it should be a lot better. You know, and like I say,
good runner.
Yeah, they got good runners. They've got a veteran offensive line. If you look at Majors, the center, and you know, the two tackles we're
Banks
talking.
Banks and Williams.
Yeah, we're talking
and
about.
And Williams is going to be back. He didn't miss that Arizona State game.
Well, the young man that was stepping in for him did a really actually a nice job. Came in the Texas A&M game, and I'm sorry, I'm spacing on the kid's name. Number 74, I remember. But he came in, was playing left tackle, playing right tackle, you know, and they really weren't missing a beat there, moving the football. So, it'll help having all their guys back to it, but this game is going to have to be won up front for Texas. If they come out of this one tomorrow night with a victory, they're going to game ball is going to be for that offensive line there, I think.
Yeah, Trevor Goosby. That was the tackle.
You go. Yeah.
I've seen people describing this Ohio State front as like SEC style, you know, and that the Georgia defense is just burned in my memory.
Yeah.
Ohio State giving up 2.3 yards per attempt. I feel like the chances of having a successful day on the ground are very, very slim, don't you?
Well,
we can hope for it, but it ain't going to happen.
It's hard because, like, the one thing that Georgia has, I think Georgia has legitimate pass rushers. When you talk about, when you talk about Mikael Williams and then you talk about Walker and those guys, they had pass rushers. I don't know. I mean, I could say I think Sawyer's a good player for Ohio State, but they don't have – what they have is they have size.
Yeah.
Williams, the defensive tackle, they've got big dudes inside. And I think that's where, you know, if Texas can they have success? Can they have success on the outside? And the one thing that Ohio State does well is they might not have pass rushers, but they have guys that can set the edge. That's the thing that when you watch teams try and run the ball – they set the edge well. They've got big inside guys, and they've got linebackers that can run and make plays. So, yeah, Texas is it's going to be a difficult task if they were able to pull this thing off.
They just have times where they're running the football really effectively, and then their entire offense will just go dormant in games.
Yeah.
And you can't do that against Ohio State if they're going to be firing all cylinders. This is going to come down a lot to the schematics. Chip Kelly, the offensive coordinator of Ohio State, did an excellent job in the Rose Bowl. What can Sark do as a play caller? Because he kind of got in his own way in that Arizona State game at times. He missed mismanaged that game a little bit. Sark has a tendency, he's got a little Mike McCarthy in him, where he can't help, but even if the run game's working, he goes away from it, and he starts trying to throw the football.
Quinn Ewers, in that game.
And that hurts the quarterback.
Yeah, Ewers, a key interception in the game. I mean, it turns the game around, so... Yeah, they need to do everything they can to keep him out of harm's way. He's capable of having a really good game, but it's going to be about the number of throws that he has to make. That could be the telling sign for this one.
You know, I think if there's a narrative for victory, it's that maybe we've been just too influenced by what happened against Oregon, right? And Ohio State is still the inconsistent team that lost to Michigan, and we're overrating them because they went up 34-0, you know?
I think the quarterback Howard is playing really well for them. These two, if you watch the Tennessee game and how he played, I think that those two victories that they've had to get to this point, I think have been a lot of it their quarterback play. And you mentioned Chip Kelly. They were in a bad spot in that Michigan game. I mean, there's a lot of questions about the type of game that Chip Kelly called. But in these playoff games that they've had, man, he has been on point, and his quarterback has responded well. He hadn't turned the ball over. They've got big-timers. See, I know I'm sitting here talking about offensive line and defensive line play. How Texas' secondary, the corners, match with these. You know, if they make these a contested game, Muhammad and Barron, those guys, if they make this a contested game, this is going to be a battle. Because Ohio State, when you look at them, the separation that they're able to get, the way that Howard throws the football, make you pay for it.
Well, Oregon didn't have anybody like Colin Jefferson who can get after the quarterback. Colin Jefferson can be a game wrecker. Anthony Hill at the second level. Like, Texas is stacked at each level of the defense. Yeah. So, I mean, talent-wise, this is going to be an absolute blast. This has the most amount of NFL talent in it between the two games. I think Matt Miller was like, there's 21 draftable players, and we're talking like day one, day two guys.
No, this is very reminiscent of the days when, in the early 90s, when Miami and then Florida State would go on it. And then you always went back and watched, let's watch this game because of the matchups.
How much of an edge will the crowd be 3 hours from Austin?
Man, I'll tell you what, though. I think we're going to see a lot of scarlet and gray in this building, too. I think it's going to be a pretty even matchup. I don't see, unless people like Eric was talking about, they end up down at the Orange Bowl because they misevaluated.
They
picked the wrong game. But I'll tell you what.
Or if you're flying Frontier, like you could have had a ticket, a reservation this morning, you won't get here till Sunday afternoon.
You might start driving right now to get here. But I expect Ohio State to be in full throat here, and I expect the same thing from Texas.
Okay. How much of a bleep show the final 8 minutes against Arizona State do you think is diminishing Longhorn confidence? Like, if they just put another touchdown on the board, say that pass from Ewers isn't picked, but it's completed, they go in and they win by 3 scores, right? How much more confident? Right now you look at the prognosticators, it seems like every coach that's being reached for a prediction is picking Ohio State. All of the national media pundits are picking Ohio State. And I just feel like you go back 10 days. And wow, that was interesting. Got an interesting sound there. But we're all good, right?
Yeah,
we're all good.
Yeah.
You guys heard me okay?
Yeah.
We're good.
That was loud.
I don't
know.
Okay, yeah.
Was that you?
I don't know what that was.
I sound like a police scanner all of a sudden.
I think police scanner jumped in there for a second, yeah.
Coming in hot. Yeah. Maybe that was an Ohio State fan. Or maybe somebody, a fan of Frontier Airlines.
It is National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day.
Sure is.
Back to blue.
But even if you can stop the freshman sensation, Jeremiah Smith, in the passing game, there's still so many other dudes that could go for 120 yards and put 40 points on.
They've got in the running back too.
They got two
running backs, and they use them in a lot of different ways. I mean, you'll see them flex them. They put them in the backfield at the same time. They're offset. I mean, there's so many things that Chip Kelly has been able to do with the talent that he has. And like I say, Texas is going to have to defend the whole field in this game. It is going to be there'll be some vertical elements to this game, but there'll also be that horizontal as well, with getting the ball in space, these guys, and letting them work.
To your point, though, Gavin, I do think There is some of that. Like, Texas lost at least national steam by seeing that game become close. You go to double overtime. I think probably everybody in the country was rooting for Arizona State outside of Texas fans. But it's also just how dominant Ohio State beat Oregon. Like, Oregon was the consensus number one, and Ohio State, they left no doubt. They kicked their ass.
I think people also look at the Texas game against Clemson where they were 14-point favorites.
Yeah.
And that game turned into a close football game. But Texas has played in, you know, played on a bunch of games like that.
It's going to come down to their defense, though.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can expect your offense to have any sort of a field day. I think both these games might see a winner tonight's game and tomorrow night's game, you know, sitting with under 20 points. And I think that's definitely what the Longhorns need to hope for, is that their defense can frustrate Ohio State just as much as the Buckeyes is going to frustrate Quinn Ewers and company. You think we see Arch Manning if it's, you know, in a significant way? Other than a couple of plays, a couple of packages?
I think Stark is going to die with him in this. I think he's dying with Quinn Ewers in this game. I really do. I mean, you're saying packages and stuff. That's always a possibility. I think they missed that element a little bit in the game against Arizona State. But I will say that I think that Sark is going to live and die with Ewers in this football game. He showed, I mean, hey, he delivered for him in that Arizona State game. There were some big throws he made at the end. That coach has to feel good about what that guy could potentially be as a closer if he needs him.
I mean, if you get shut out at half, though, you know, if it's 21-0.
Yeah, if you get shut out at half, I think he showed you against Georgia. Like, if it's he's desperate for a spark, and clearly the offense is not doing anything, that would be the only chance, I think, that you're actually going to see Arch play more than just a package here and there, and they use his legs. Otherwise, this is Quinn's game.
Yeah.
He's letting Quinn ride this out.
I'm trying to think, was Sark part of that Alabama staff when Saban made the switch from Tua to from Hurts to Tua?
He might have been the OC.
Yeah, and maybe to kind of talk about with Gavin's 21-0, do you light a spark that way? I mean, that's, you know, maybe that's the avenue you might take.
Rope Hintz and Maverick Bork lighting a spark for the Stars here. 7 minutes to go, first period. They lead in Philadelphia 2-0.
There you go.
So,
dude, they're kicking.
That's nice.
They're playing dominant right now. Dodonov just had a great look, and it was a big-time save by the Flyers. But Stars right now are absolutely peppering the Flyers. I don't know. They could be up 5-0 right now.
Let's go. All right, let's step aside. We'll crosstalk with the Fan After Dark, see what they have cooking here for you on a Thursday night next in the Nation. Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for riding with us. Hopefully everybody stayed warm and safe out there as we're now set to talk with the Fan After Dark and see what Fred and Blake have cooking from their cozy homes. And a good evening, gentlemen. How the heck are you?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, it's kind of wild. We're over here doing, I mean, I knew we could, you know, work remotely, but I've never done radio remotely, so this is a first.
This is a first for me as well. How do we sound, boys? Do we sound choppy? Do we sound crispy? You guys look beautiful.
You sound a little Mike McCarthy-esque with the heavy breathing.
Yeah, Fred's mic needs to come up a little bit, I would say, or maybe it's just how it sounds in my headphones. So
no, his is definitely low on my end.
Yeah, okay. And then Blake, you're coming in loud and clear.
Yeah, you need to come down a little bit.
What's the craziest weather thing that y'all saw today? I mean, the 18-wheeler leaning over the overpass was just insane. Dude must have had a hell of a time getting out of that cab and back onto the ramp.
Yeah, that was pretty tough. I think the craziest stuff has got to be the hat that I'm repping. You know, pray for LA. You know, what's going on over there in Hollywood and the Palisades is pretty tough. But the fact that there's fires over there, and it's Snowmageddon in Dallas, just shows you the duality of Mother Nature.
That's right. Very profound.
That is the duality of Mother Nature, indeed.
It really is.
Well done.
I think it's the fact that the storm actually hit, right? I mean, how many times have we heard, oh, it's going to be this, it's going to be that, and then it's much ado about nothing. And I don't know where y'all live. I'm on the north side over here in Louisville. It is slushy. It's nasty. There's snow on the ground. I did get out and drive around a little bit today. Not the worst, but again, hey, be careful out there, folks.
Yeah, the thing hit, and I'm right there with you. I get frustrated. I feel like they're selling us just to keep us home around the TV most of the time, but definitely paid off today.
Hey, Blake, are you in a fitting room at Nordstrom's or something like that? Where are you broadcasting from today?
Okay, so I'm trying to make sure that my mic volume is not too loud. I'm trying to kind of change
louder.
Now it's gone lower. Now you need
louder.
Bring it up.
Sound better.
Live testing.
There you go.
That's good right there?
There you go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Boom. I'm still trying to figure out how to use this Scarlett Focusrite i2 right behind me. But behind me is a steel pipe rack, if you get a nice view of it.
Excuse me?
Big fan of clothes. Big fan of the clothes being on display. This is actually one of two racks in Blake's casa. There's one in the living room as well.
Oh.
And then all of Shorty, her clothes, are to my left in the closet. So.
All right.
I guess that means
she's not as big a fan of displaying the clothes as you are.
You know, she likes to keep them hidden. You know, she mainly just wears
her rack
anyways. She's got the full closet.
Hey now, Brian. Hey now.
That's enough.
That is the clothes rack.
I'm gonna push your button over here,
clothes
bro.
Clothes rack. Yeah. Lucius, I took the clothes rack.
Go ahead and close them out of a gap.
Amplify them. It's in his bag.
That big rack of hers and that peanut butter skin.
Joy, do you guys want to play a game?
Yes.
Okay, I have top 10 important playoff players that aren't quarterbacks. Okay,
oh,
top
perfect.
10 most important non-quarterbacks in the playoffs here. This is NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. Y'all ready for this? Just go ahead and blurt it out if you have it first. I'm gonna keep score back here, and I will be judging all of you based on the final score of this. Number 10,
Jefferson.
He is no Ironhead.
but he is
Cam.
Yes.
Cam Hayward.
I believe I'll give that point to Fred.
Thank you,
Freddie.
Okay.
Good job, Fred. Right.
Freddie D.
He said Cam. He didn't even say the last name.
Yeah.
He helped me.
Cam.
Number
Cam
two Hayward. On the list is Mr. Swift.
Travis Kelce.
Not DeAndre. He got
Donovan.
It.
Donovan.
Zach is on the board there.
DeAndre.
Boom.
Tied at one.
Boom.
Mr. Swift.
Number eight on the list is a safety that plays for one of Brian's former teams, the first team he scouted for.
Jair Alexander?
That's a corner.
That's a corner who's hurt.
McKinley.
Oh, Xavier McKinney.
Who said McKinney first? Was that Fred again?
Brian. Brian said McKinley, but he knew who it was.
McKinney.
He knew who it was.
McKinney, the city.
Is on the board. We're tied at one. Still waiting for Chia Follow here to get involved in the game, and Lucius, for that matter.
I don't think his mic's been plugged in for the last 15, 20 minutes.
Where'd the kids go? They were jumping up and down.
He's
got WrestleMania going on behind him.
Get those kids some boxing gloves.
Number seven is well known as the NFL's most well-rounded defensive back.
Kyle Hamilton.
Wow, look at Wolchuk here.
Wow.
Bang.
Jeez.
Takes the lead at 2-1 to one.
What's he doing over there? He's looking at the ceiling. What?
Oh,
he might have Googled the list.
Oh, okay.
Knowing him.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's looking at.
Oh, yeah, I Googled it. You calling me Corey Majors? Come on.
Corey Majors.
Number six is a running back. Switch teams, went to a much colder climate. You could
Saquon
say he
Barkley.
Did the
Jacobs.
What's that?
Oh, yeah, which one?
Yeah, Josh
Jacobs.
Jacobs.
Oh,
okay.
We're halfway through the game. It's 2-1. We have 5 to go. We head up to Kansas City, where one of the best defensive players in the game,
Chris Jones,
dominates this time of year. Wolchuk getting it done. Number 4, we go to Motor City, where this part of Thunder and Lightning is super fast. It has
Jameer Gibbs.
Number 3 on the list, we go a little farther north than Detroit to maybe the best wide receiver in the game.
Justin Jefferson.
There you go, Eric.
Number 2 is a runner the Cowboys wanted nothing to do with.
Derrick Henry.
Ball. Yeah, and Barkley. Number 1 is the other guy, Saquon Barkley. Here they come, the Fan After Dark. Thanks to Lucius Alexander in the Pimp Cup at Master Control there. Just went 5 flawless. Thanks to Wolchuk and Chiafalo and Brian Broaddus. I'm Gavin Dawson. Till tomorrow at 2, stay safe, stay warm. You're going home with the G-Bag Nation. At ease.